Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Welcome to this, the latest OIS Energy Transition Programme podcast. My name is David Ledesma, and I'm Distinguished Research Fellow at the Institute. And it's my great pleasure to be joined today by Ramat Poudine, who's Senior Research Fellow, and Martin Palovich, who's OIS Aramco Fellow at the Institute. Now, we're here today to discuss their paper, PolyGrid 2050, Integrating Hydrogen into the European Energy Transfer Infrastructure Landscape. And that was published by the OIS in October last year. Now, just to timestamp this recording, we're recording the podcast on the morning of Tuesday, the 7th of February, 2023. Ramat and Martin, welcome back to the OIS podcast series.
And nice to be here, David.
Nice to be here.
So, Ramat, can I come to you for the first question? What are the different means of transporting hydrogen?
Hydrogen can be transported as a gas or a liquid or a derivative via a variety of means, like, for instance, a repurposed gas pipeline, a new pipeline, or even through road, rail, or sea transport. It is also possible under certain circumstances to transfer electrical energy instead of hydrogen and produce hydrogen on site. Pipelines are among the efficient ways of transporting a high volume of hydrogen over medium to long distances. We have also the road transport, which is suitable for the lower volume of the hydrogen over short distances. Rail is, on the other hand, is a good option if you want to transport a lower volume of hydrogen over medium distances. But the sea transport is a great option if you have a larger volume of hydrogen to transport over very long distances, like, for instance, transoceanic distances. The thing is that at the moment, in most places around the world, production and consumption of hydrogen is usually co-located. They're close to one another. And that basically means that the need for a larger scale hydrogen transport infrastructure has not been that much so far. But if in future we are going to have a hydrogen economy, where hydrogen is actually utilized in many different sectors by many different type of customers, or if we are going to have a hydrogen transport and hydrogen import, then the requirement of the hydrogen transport infrastructure is going to be different. It is likely that in a fully developed hydrogen economy, a range of hydrogen transportation infrastructure is needed, from pipeline, from railroad, from trailer tubers, or sea transport.
Okay, now perhaps I can come to you then, Martin, because in your paper, you refer to the term polygrid. You know, can you, you know, explain to our listeners what does it mean and why is it so important?
Well, as Ramat explained, hydrogen can be transported using different infrastructures. So with the term polygrid, we introduced into the paper as to emphasize that these different infrastructures actually, from the viewpoint of hydrogen, represent only elements of one grand polygrid. On grand infrastructure that spans across several sectors. So when one looks or takes a position of a hydrogen producer or hydrogen consumer, one is actually free to choose which infrastructure to use to transport hydrogen. So one can understand these infrastructures in different sectors as substitutes which compete with each other, or one can think of them actually in terms of components of which have synergies amongst each other. So more or less what the term polygrid is supposed to emphasize is that the development of this infrastructure is interdependent. And this is more or less the main point why we talk of polygrid in this context.
Well, Matt, why don't I kind of come back to you? Because in the paper, you argue that it's difficult to develop such a hydrogen infrastructure, you know, the polygrid that Martin's just discussed, you know, using the established infrastructure planning process. So, you know, why is that the case?
We think that the established energy infrastructure planning processes, which guides the development of the electricity and gas network as the two prime energy systems that we have in Europe, basically cannot achieve the optimized cross-sectoral coordination. For two specific reasons, this is the case. The first is that the established energy infrastructure planning processes are usually sector-specific. And in other words, each infrastructure is subject to a sector-specific regulatory framework. And because of that, it is sort of developed independently of what is happening in other sectors. But the thing is that when we are going to have a polygrid in future, electricity and gas network will be part of a broader hydrogen network, which includes multiple types of the energy transfer technologies that we mentioned in the previous question. And that basically means that the hydrogen-driven investments in established energy networks cannot be just really governed by sector-specific supply and demand. It really needs to be coordinated with what is happening in other sectors in terms of production, consumption, and infrastructure development that are happening in other sectors. And that basically means that we need an adjustment to the current energy infrastructure planning processes, which are at the moment, they're all sector-specific, obviously. The second issue is that the electricity and gas networks are regulated natural monopolies, which are a type of infrastructure that we cannot duplicate for economic reasons. Whereas we have other type of possible hydrogen transfer technologies, like, for instance, road or sea transport, which are potentially competitive. There is no reason to have many ships to carry hydrogen. There is no problem with that. So there is a sort of institutional misalignment between the architecture and the planning process of these different sectors that are capable of transferring hydrogen. And that means that we need new cross-sectoral coordination mechanism to sort of augment the established planning processes that we have in order to sort of account for the hydrogen-related investment that are happening outside the monopoly setting. So these two issues are the main reason that we think that the established energy infrastructure planning process that exists currently in Europe are inadequate to sort of incentivize cross-sectoral coordination.
So Martin, you know, which solutions do you investigate in your paper to address the issue of cross-sectoral coordination of hydrogen transport infrastructure?
Well, what we do in the paper is that we look at the proposals of different European institutions and stakeholders as what do they propose, how to coordinate infrastructures from different sectors. And we actually managed to summarize these positions within what we call three approaches, you know, like three institutional setups, how these stakeholders imagine it. So we have a so-called centrally coordinated approach, market-based approach, and regulatory approach, which roughly can be said correspond to these classical governance models, which one knows from the institutional economics, meaning organizing systems through hierarchy, through markets, or through the network. So the centrally coordinated approach corresponds to what we in institutional economics call hierarchy. So one imagines some kind of a central planner in the system who coordinates actions of all the stakeholders, meaning all the investors into the infrastructure. This kind of central planner can be an independent institution which takes over this task, but it can be also, for example, some kind of a central or common platform where the stakeholders exchange on their plans of developing future hydrogen infrastructure. As opposed to this market-based approach, meaning typical market, we have independently acting stakeholders, each deciding on their investment according to their commercial interests. In this kind of decentralized system, one uses price signals at the energy markets that coordinate these individual actions together. So it is extremely important that the markets function well, are not distorted, and reflect more or less all the signals or all the information in the prices. The regulatory approach is what one in institutional economy refers to as a network. And actually what it does is that it focuses on the regulated infrastructure providers and provides them with an incentives to decide on their investment as to optimize the whole system and not their own grid. So what happens is more or less when this kind of regulated actor realizes that there is a need to transport hydrogen between two locations, instead of simply investing, he first evaluates whether some kind of other infrastructure provider or some kind of other technological solution from outside of the regulated sector can provide this this transportation service more efficiently or more reliably. And if this is so, then this regulated actor foregoes the investment, more or less informs this other party that they are on turn, or alternatively cooperates with them as to provide the best option, the best solution from the social perspective.
So Ramat, you know, have these solutions ever been used in the energy sector before? And And if yes, perhaps you could give our listeners some examples.
These solutions have been already used in energy sector, of course, but with varying degrees. And there are some examples of these approaches within the energy sector. For the centralized coordination, a good example is the Interlink model of the ENTSO-G and ENTSO-E, the European Network of Transmission System Operators for gas and for electricity. They basically use an integrated scenario planning for the power and gas sector when they develop their 10-year network development plans for their transmission networks. This is currently a developed scenario planning, but in future it is expected to actually include assessment of specific investment projects. Another example for central coordination is the discussion that we have in the UK about creating a future system operator, which basically is a new body that, if established, will bring together the planning for the entire energy system under a single institution with the purpose of easing the energy transition and reducing its cost. And by entire energy system here, I mean that the primary energy system that we have, like electricity and gas, as well as new technologies like hydrogen and CCUS. For the market-based approach, there are also some examples. In the electricity sector, the so-called merchant transmission investment is a good example. It is a model which private investors develop in transmission infrastructure along the congested region with the objective to benefit from price arbitrage between the two nodes. Another example is also in the gas sector. For example, the so-called open season procedure, which is a process that market commercial infrastructure whereby sort of potential shippers are invited to contract for the capacity of the planned infrastructure on a long-term basis. For the regulatory approach also, there is an example in the electricity sector, and that is the case of the distribution network companies, when they are incentivized to integrate distributed generation, storage, or demand response as alternative to grid reinforcement. So there are some levels of experience with all these approaches in the energy sector, although the degree of these experience actually varies across the different approaches that we mentioned here.
So, Martin, in the paper, what framework do you use to evaluate these approaches?
To evaluate these approaches, we use so-called coherence framework from institutional economics. So to put it in a nutshell, this framework basically states that a sector has a good performance when its institutional and technical architecture are aligned. So what it means, you can imagine, for example, a power network. It's like a natural monopoly, and we know that from technologically it's best when it is a natural monopoly, right? So it would predict, for example, that central planning, speaking hierarchical approach, it's better to this kind of technology than, for example, organizing the investment into power networks to merchant trading, which is market driven, you know. So that's the basic assumption behind this framework. And we are using this framework actually because it fits so well to the question which we have. So when you think that the three approaches which we have introduced before are associated with this kind of classical institutional settings, right? We are talking of hierarchies, we are talking of markets, and we are talking of networks. We understand pretty well what their institutional architecture is. So the only thing which you need to do for the analysis is more or less to understand what is this technical architecture? So what are the specifics of hydrogen transport in the future hydrogen economy? And once you understand the challenges, the problems associated with this technology, then you know which of the three approaches actually to pick.
Robert, so talking further about the framework, you know, what do we learn by applying it in terms of choosing the optimal coordination mechanism?
Well, David, we can think of at least four important criteria to sort of compare these sort of approaches that you mentioned. One important criteria is that to what extent it is able to deal with uncertainty about technology development and hydrogen transport need that we are going to have in future. Another is accounting for external network effect, which may result from unintended leaks between different sectors that are capable of transferring hydrogen. The third is that whether the approach that we adopt creates a sort of a level playing field for all type of infrastructure that are capable of transferring hydrogen. And finally, the fourth dimension is that to what extent we have experience with that specific approach. In terms of dealing with uncertainty, centrally coordinated approach is less effective compared with other approaches because of the simple reason of that the central coordinator has an informational disadvantage. But the thing is that none of the other approaches are also perfect in this respect. Central coordination is more effective in addressing unknown external effects, which are basically expected to emerge when we are going to have a hydrogen economy and a possibility of the transferring hydrogen through various means. But the thing is that these external effects are really not very well understood, and we still don't know really, how to identify and measure them. In terms of the creating a level playing field, regulatory approach is likely to outperform other methods. Market-based approach is very ineffective in terms of creating this sort of situation because grid-based infrastructure are asset-specific, they are of high risk, and that has implication for market-based investment because there is always a risk of these infrastructure become stranded when there is no guarantee for cost recovery. Centrally coordinated approach is also at the risk of sort of technology sector or stakeholder bias, but measures can be implemented to sort of lower these sort of biases. When it comes to experience with implementation, there are more information available with respect to market approach compared to others. There is limited experience with regulated approach, and the consensus that its implementation is likely to be complex. There are more experience with centrally coordinated approach because it to some extent is already been applied in gas and electricity. Overall, each of these approaches that we discuss in the paper has its own advantages and disadvantages. But if we look at it from the perspective of the stage of development of the industry, some of these approaches are more effective compared to other. For instance, when the industry is at the nascent level, a particular approach may be better compared to when the industry is mature. So the level of the industry really development has an implication for the choice of the optimal coordination mechanism in this respect, as well as the contextual factors in the country that it is going to be implemented.
Well, Martin, if I can come to you for the last question. What is your policy advice resulting from this analysis then?
Well, the short answer will be actually that centrally coordinated approach performs pretty well, as already suggested by Rahmat. But in our view, this is at least not the complete answer, right? This is when one takes the perspective, as we have it today, that we have major networks in Europe. We have relatively few market players when it comes to delivery of hydrogen as of now. And we are thinking of, first of all, delivering hydrogen to big consumers, like, for example, greening the steel industry. As Rahmat already mentioned, as the hydrogen economy is going to be developing, as the whole sector is going to be developing further, it might quite well be that this view is going to change, it's going to evolve, to use the right terms, using my academic background. So, for example, as we better understand the linkages between the sectors, it might be that we are able to address the challenges more or less associated with hydrogen better using regulatory market-based approach. Or, for example, when we start thinking of new technologies which might come in, or more actors, market-driven actors actually transporting hydrogen. Or, for example, when one starts not only thinking about large industries, but one comes to the conclusion that, for example, we are not capable of sufficiently renovating houses and we need to use green hydrogen actually to also heat these houses, then obviously our idea of how the hydrogen economy looks in the future is going to change. We will need different technologies. And accordingly to that, we will also need a different institutional setup. So for now, given our current starting point and given our current understanding of how the economy is going to look like in the future, central coordinating approach seems to be performing well. But we will still like to emphasize that this might actually evolve with time.
Well, Matt and Martin, thank you so much for your time today and your insights from your paper, Polygrid 2050, Integrating Hydrogen into the European Energy Transfer Infrastructure Landscape, that was published by the OIS, as I said earlier, in October 2022. Well, I hope you all enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our original research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.